People cannot live without hope. Throughout history, human beings have endured the loss of many things. People have lost everything: health, reputations, careers. They have lost everything, even their loved ones, and yet they have endured. The pages of history books are filled with those who have suffered loss, and the Bible speaks of brethren who have endured even to death. With unbroken faith, crushed bodily like Job, yet finding the strength to go on. Humans can survive the loss of almost anything, but not without hope. Hope is how we survive. Hope is what gets us through from day to day. It is in this context that the Lord sent his servant Zechariah with a message of hope. The Jews had come out from exile in Babylon and had only been back in Israel for about 16 years, and they had lost their hope while they were in Babylon. When they came back to Israel again, they had started rebuilding the temple, but had stopped because their zeal had just run out. Haggai the prophet had brought them a sober message of condemnation from Yahweh for being self-motivated and self-consumed. Haggai 1:4 says, "Is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your panelled houses and this temple to lie in ruins? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways." With this rebuke, Haggai manages to turn the people around to rebuild the temple again, to start building. And remember, brothers and sisters, we are in the process of building our spiritual temple. We are like the returned Israelites in a way, living to try to improve ourselves, improve our characters. But are we living at ease and living for ourselves as they were? 5 months into the rebuilding of the temple, Zechariah comes on the scene. And apparently in the course of a single night, he receives 8 visions recorded in chapters 1 to chapter 6. His initial message incorporated a divine principle that was a wake-up call to the nation. Verse 3, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, turn ye unto me, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will turn unto you, saith the Lord of hosts." This statement is the basis of any dealings of mankind that they have with deity. The order first is for mankind to turn unto Yahweh, not him turning unto them in their wickedness. "Turn ye unto me, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will turn unto you." His ear is always open to those that seek him, and the door has been opened by Christ. Israel had sinned and rejected him over and over again. So Zechariah's message would have been one of warning and direction, and undoubtedly have helped the energies of those people who had lost their faith in the work of building the temple. And in our lives, we should rededicate ourselves always to the great goal that we have of building our spiritual temple. The power of the message of Zechariah was in that he gave them hope. Brothers and sisters, we need to take our minds back to the day to realise how despondent they must have felt and understand the thoughts of those Israelites on hearing Zechariah's encouraging words, how wonderful the message must have been to their ears. Now, we all know that the house of Judah went into exile to Babylon for 70 years because they disobeyed God and they worshipped other gods, which was the most hurtful thing that a husband, which Yahweh was the type of the husband to Israel, could have faced. But do we really know what it was like for those Jews who were living in that day? How would we feel if a hostile army surrounded our city gates? How would we feel knowing that we were powerless to save ourselves? We could start thinking about the safety of our families, about everything that we had that we thought as being dear to us, being taken away. Our minds would be obsessed with the thought of the cruel Babylonian soldiers who were masters at slicing a person through with their swords. What made it even worse for them was the fact that their own prophet Jeremiah had said that they should surrender to the Babylonians because this was God's punishment for their rebellion against him. And Yahweh had said that he would look after them in Babylon and he would bring them home after 70 years. But the king of Judah, Zedekiah, was more afraid of his own subjects than taking the following the advice of Jeremiah. So they never surrendered. If he had surrendered his nation, many people's lives would have been saved. And so Babylon's great army surrounded Jerusalem. The Babylonians taunted the Israelites day to day about their imminent defeat, and soon their food dried up and they began to starve to death. The continual sounds of the battering rams breaking down the walls must have echoed in their heads. And finally the Babylonians breached the city and King Zedekiah fled, and the captain of the guard, the Babylonian guard, caught him at Jericho and took him to Riblah, where he saw his sons killed before his eyes, and then that cruel spear of the Babylonians pierced his own eyes and made him blind, and he was led by chains into Babylon. After a few short years, the population was led to Babylon to be slaves to the Babylonians. From businessmen to slaves, landowners to prisoners, merry hearts to utter depression, unable to see how they could ever get home again. This is the time of Psalm 137. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hung our harps upon the willows in the midst of it. For there those who carried us away captive asked us of a song, and those who plundered us requested myrrh, saying, sing us the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? The return of the Israelites that returned needed a lot of encouragement, and this message of Zechariah would have been just what was needed. They needed to understand that Yahweh was on their side, not against him. They needed to feel that the ruins would be rebuilt and the nation's heart beating again. They needed to understand the promises to Abraham was still to be fulfilled. They needed to feel safe again. And Zechariah the prophet and priest gave them hope that they never thought possible. He spake of the Messiah coming to the temple and bringing salvation to the people. He reassured the remnant that they had returned from Babylon to inhabit the land for Yahweh's purpose, that his promises demanded it. He spake of the Messiah's glorious reign over the nations of the earth in his kingdom. He showed them that God had not abandoned his people or his promise that he would dwell among them. Even though their history was one of unfaithfulness, it had not frustrated Yahweh's plan. Zechariah declared that the Lord would remain faithful to the promises he had made. And this was exactly the type of exhortation that their ears needed to hear. Shout and be glad, O daughter of Zion, for I am coming. I will live among you, declares the Lord. Many nations will be joined with the Lord in that day and will become my people. I will live among you, and you will know that the Lord Almighty has sent me to you. The Lord will inherit Judah as his portion in the Holy Land, and will again choose Jerusalem. Be still before the Lord, all mankind, because he roused himself from his holy dwelling. Zechariah 2, verses 6 to 13. And Zechariah shows that Yahweh has an abiding commitment to defend and to bless Israel. But at first it was imperative that they get themselves right with Yahweh. Zechariah personally acknowledges their sins, according to our ways and according to our deeds, so he has dealt with us. Verse 6. And the message from Yahweh was very clear. Thus saith Yahweh of armies, turn now from your evil ways and your evil deeds. Zechariah was anxious for Israel to start on the right footing with Yahweh. And we can feel the adrenaline pumping through him. He must get the people to heed the warning. He must make them repent quickly so that they could be in a position to receive Yahweh's blessings. It was at this point that Zechariah received the prophetic visions of hope. The visions of the man among the myrtle trees, Zechariah 1. The four horns and the four craftsmen, or the carpenters. The surveyor and a measuring line in chapter 2. The cleansing and crowning of Joshua the high priest, Zechariah 3. The vision of the gold lampstand and the two olive trees, Zechariah 4. The flying scroll in Zechariah 5. And the woman in the basket, Zechariah 5:5-11. And the four chariots. In the first vision, Zechariah saw a man riding upon a red horse that was between the myrtle trees, verse 8. Of chapter 1. And with him was other horses speckled in white. Who was the man on the red horse? The primary application of this vision was to the head angel Michael. He was in charge of Israel's affairs, and he was seen to be standing among the myrtle trees. And this was significant that he was standing beside the myrtle trees because it signifies that he was standing now beside Israel in a supporting role. The myrtle tree takes us back to the Day of Tabernacles, which was a feast of harvest for Israel, a time of rejoicing and a feast of deliverance. The first vision, therefore, shows that the angel of heaven fighting beside Israel, not against Israel, as the Jews in dispersion would have felt that God was against them. Here, the vision was that the angels were working with Israel. And the other horses type the multitude of angels who were to focus upon the restoration of Israel. Imagine the hope that this would have brought, this vision. I am very jealous for Jerusalem and Zion and angry with the nations that fell secure. I will return to Jerusalem with mercy, and there my house will be rebuilt. My towns will again overflow with prosperity, and the Lord will again comfort Zion and choose Jerusalem, Zechariah 1:14. Wonderful news to the ears. Of course, we all know that there is a secondary application to Christ and the saints who stand with Israel and overturn the governments of the earth when Christ returns. Daniel's 2 image, the stone power, grinding the image to pieces and filling the whole earth. The second vision was also very comforting to them. Zechariah saw four horns and then four carpenters. Again, Zechariah again asks the meaning of who are the four horns. These are the horns that scattered Israel. And the craftsmen are here to terrify them and cast out those nations who lifted up their horns against the land of Judah to scatter its people, Zechariah 1:18. These horns equate to the four great and powerful empires that came against Israel. But there were four carpenters who were sent to cast out the horns. Again, we can see the message of hope. The horns were the enemies of Israel that were to be broken. And finally, Christ and the saints would bring all nations under his dominion. Israel would be a blessed nation and respected again. In the next vision, Zechariah sees a man with a measuring line. Go measure Jerusalem to find out how long it is. And the angel came and told the angel that was talking to Zechariah, run, tell the young man, Jerusalem will be a city without walls because of the great number of men and the livestock in it. And I myself will be a wall of fire round about, declares the Lord, and I will be its glory within, Zechariah 2, verses 4 to 5. This is an incredibly prophetic statement. The vision was showing that there would be a day when Jerusalem would grow to vast proportions, and they wouldn't need a wall to protect them because God was going to be the protection. The desolation that the Jews had experienced when they came out of Jerusalem sapped all their enthusiasm. They saw the once vibrant city that King David ruled over, and the splendor of the reign of Solomon was now a city that was a rubble of concrete, not concrete, but rubber of stones and, and dust, and things were, the city was burnt. So verse 6 says, "Come, come, flee from the land of the north, declares the Lord, for I have scattered you to the four winds of heaven, declares the Lord." And it is interesting that the exiles of Israel are being called from the north in the four winds. In Zechariah's day, the exiles were called back from Babylon, weren't they? So the complete fulfillment of this is as Isaiah the prophet said in Isaiah 11, verses 11 to 12. "In that day, the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant that is left of his people. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble the scattered people of Judah from the four corners of the earth." And we know that it's Elijah's work in the future. "Christ will live in the midst of his people once they return. And many nations will be joined with the Lord in that day and will become my people. And I will live among you, and you will know that the Lord Almighty has sent me to you." Zechariah 2, verse 10 to 11. All the fears and questions that the people must have had, the ones that had come back from Babylon, were being answered by these wonderful visions. The fourth vision was the cleansing and crowning of Joshua the high priest. He had dirty garments. And this shows that the nations was going to be cleansed from sin with the reinstatement of the priesthood. It would become a priestly nation again. The glory would return. This was followed by the vision of the gold lampstand and the two olive trees. Again, it is a message of hope. Zechariah is figuratively awakened out of the sleep of death and shown the lampstand of the Spirit, whose light destroys the darkness. And it's interesting that the oil is fed by two olive trees, the oil to the lamp. And Zechariah sees a great mountain that hinders the rebuilding of the temple, and this is the opposition. But soon it is leveled to the ground. People like Sanballat, who are against the rebuilding of the temple. But that great mountain was leveled to the ground, and the meaning is very clear. They were experiencing a great mountain of opposition in their building that threatened the completion of the work. And the angel says that they would finish the temple, verse 9, and that the lampstand would dispel darkness in the holy place again. In other words, the temple would be back into operation, and the candlestick would be there in the most holy place, in the holy place, and it would be illuminating. This was the confirmation that they needed to hear, the priesthood back in action again. We know that there's another fulfillment of this vision that gives us hope, brothers and sisters, that we need to hear, just like they did. And the second application to this is under Christ, the latter-day fulfillment, when the multitudinous Christ from the stock of the Jewish olive tree and the stock of the Gentile olive tree will illuminate the whole earth, and the gospel of Christ will be preached. They will level the mountains of resistance, the nations. All nations will serve Christ, the King Priest, and darkness will be replaced with the light of the glory of God. We haven't time to go through the other three, the flying scroll and the woman in a basket and the four chariots, but these have to do with judgment on sin in Israel and on the Gentile nations, and especially those nations that will not submit to Christ. But the book of Zechariah contains a promise of forgiveness for Israel, blessings of restoration of the land and the people from exile, and judgments on the nations who come against God's plans and against his promises. I am very jealous for Zion. I am burning with jealousy for her. I will return to Zion and dwell in Jerusalem. I will save my people from the countries of the east and the west. I will bring them back to live in Jerusalem. They shall be my people, and I will be a faithful and righteous to them as their God. Zechariah 8:2. And speaking of the people of the nations, God says, "In those days, 10 men from all languages and nations will take hold of one Jew by the edge of his robe and say, 'Let us go with you, because we have heard that God is with you.'" To the Jewish people, he says, I will pour out the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and supplication. They will look on me, the one they have pierced, and mourn for him as one mourns for an only child, and grieve bitterly for him as one grieves for a firstborn son. On that day a fountain will be opened to the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to cleanse them from sin and impurity. Zechariah 12. And of the Messiah he says, on that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, east of Jerusalem, and the Mount of Olives will be split in two from east to west, forming a great valley, with half of the mountain moving north and half moving south. Then the survivors from all nations that have attacked Jerusalem will go up year to year to worship the King, the Lord Almighty, and to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. And that's from Zechariah 14. Brothers and sisters, this is that day, and we can be excited about that day and be a part of the vision. Not only part of the vision, not only witnesses to God's plan, but actually participating in the prophecy of that vision itself. We have the blessings of being able to look back into Zechariah's day and seeing his message and seeing that Yahweh was working with his people even though they didn't believe it. They had lost hope. They felt unworthy of their God and thought that he had deserted them. But all they needed to do was turn to him. A simple thing for them to do. And we should never lose sight of the fact that Yahweh is working in our lives as well. And even when we think that things are not working out right, when things appear to be going totally wrong, we're actually going through a period of trial. And trial brings about perfection of our characters. It polishes the ragged corners of our natures. For us to be the body of Christ, we must go through these trials of life. And in fact, the trials of life, even though they're grievous, are actually a blessing to us. It's not a cursing, but a blessing when God looks at us and tries to develop our characters. Why should we expect anything less than trials? Trials are divine, sent to perfect us into people that he wants us to be. We should never feel abandoned. The opposite is the case. He loves them whom he chastens. The story of the exiled Jews are a story of endurance and deliverance, of keeping faith and trusting in his love, and most of all, of maintaining hope.